listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
Welcome on in to the Forza Podcast. It's your guy, Jordan, and today I am joined by John Michaels as my guest co-host. John, how you doing, man?
Doing great. Anytime we can sit and talk Canes, I'm all about it. Obviously, we'd be remiss if we don't start the podcast. Prayers to Marsh and his family. I know a lot of you guys follow him on social media. Probably saw, you know, his father unexpectedly passed away about a day ago. Not on. You know, Kane's family has always been really tight and really close. And I saw some of the outpouring of support for him on social media. I sent him a couple of messages. I know he's probably dealing with a hell of a lot more than worry about responding to me. But, man, our thoughts and prayers are with him and his family. We love you, bro. If there's anything you ever need from any one of us, you know we're here for you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, I just want to echo what you said. You know, we did a show last night where Derek Coe helped me host. And you know, we obviously want to give Marsh all the time that he needs before he's ready to jump back into doing Fours Up. But, you know, we're lucky that we have some good guys around Kane's family that are, you know, willing to fill in for him and help us still put out good content. And you know, we're just hoping for the best, I guess. So anyways, tonight we got a really good show, man. We got Dan Cilio, member of the 1986 Canes, coming on tonight. And I'm going to go ahead and dial him up. Are you ready for that?
Let's go. Cilio's one of my favorite guys to talk to. I've got stories of hanging out with him down in New Orleans for Super Bowl Radio Row back when he was with 560 QAM. He's a good dude. He's got great energy all the time. So very excited to talk about Dan, try to get him to get some of the stories from the 86 team and beyond. So I can't wait to talk to Dan here in just a moment.
Cool, man. I'll dial him up now.
All right.
Dan, you there?
Yeah, right there, man.
What's up, man? So welcome into the podcast, Dan Cilio, member of the 1986 Miami Hurricanes team, arguably one of the most talented teams, in my opinion, are you know, right up there with the 01 team. So, Dan, you're on with John Michaels. He said you guys have spoken before.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Dan, what's going on, my friend? How you doing?
Oh, good, man. You work with my boy Craig Larson and all them. All good, man.
Yeah, Craig's my guy, does a great job hooking me up on SB Nation Radio. We actually hung out, and you may remember this, you may not, New Orleans Super Bowl Radio Row, back when you were with QAM. I think we ended up at an establishment that we will not name, and there were some former Canes that were there as well, and a lot of $1 bills, if I remember correctly.
All I know is this, that's a very good man who understands, as a media person, when you're in the locker room, it stays in the locker room. And in sports talk radio, that's our locker room. So very good, John. I'm in.
So Dan, I want to start with this. And you talk about being in the locker room in sports talk radio. I've been in the radio business 16 years. You've been in a long time and had a ton of success in this. How much pleasure does it give you as a Cane, a former Cane, one of the guys that was in the trenches, when you hear and you see how our program is still remembered for all the great stuff that you guys did?
You know, we did a podcast, all of us, with Luther Campbell about a month ago. We all got together, Reggie Wayne, Frank Gore, myself, Warren Sapp. And it was really great to hear the guys who came after Jerome and myself and Alonzo and Stubbs and Michael Irvin, that these guys were able to carry on a tradition. And what I loved about it was that they understood what we had laid down. And I really took great pride in listening to those guys talking about, hey, I went to Miami because of what you guys did. I went to Miami because I wanted to speak my mind. And, you know, that's one of the great things. And we're seeing a little bit of that now being played out with some of the locker rooms, like in Clemson and in Iowa. I will tell you this, guys, one of the greatest educations I ever got from the University of Miami was being in that locker room with those guys, because everybody can speak their mind, but you better have an opinion and you better have conviction behind your opinion. And it was one of the great things that fueled us. When they say it's a Canes thing, it's the greatest fraternity in all of college sports that I have ever seen. And I can't tell you how privileged I am to be a small little pebble in that whole thing.
Yeah, man. I mean, just so I'm only 26 years old. You know, so I missed the team that you were on and, you know, the teams in the early 90s and stuff. My first foray into watching Miami football was, you know, the 2001 and 2002 seasons. And then I really started to become a fan during the Randy Shannon era and then the Al Golden era. But that's you mentioned fraternity, right? And that is what drew me in with such conviction. Was, you know, I've always been a huge NFL fan, and you notice the guys from Miami, you know, they always meet at center field and they take a picture throwing up the U. They, you know, that really bled through into the NFL. And, you know, as a kid, like, that was like heroin for me, man. I loved seeing these guys just have such a strong bond over their roots, and it made me want to be a part of it, you know?
Well, it's really about community. Let me tell you, when you walk onto the field of the Orange Bowl back in the day and you see the city of Miami welcomed you to Miami's Orange Bowl, and you understand the history that was in that building. I was telling a story the other day. One of the great things about going down to Little Havana when I was a kid is that the Cuban folks in that community used to give us all brown paper bags with Cuban sandwiches, desserts, food every day. That we would play, I'd have a brown paper bag after we got done playing a football game at that place, and everyone parked on the lawns. It was $5, everybody in that community. And I just loved the Cuban folks in that South Florida region who were around that stadium at the time, because it really was a wonderful thing to walk into that place when you're playing Oklahoma, you're playing Florida State, you're playing the Gators. And that place has got 80,000 and it's rocking, and it was really one of the most exhilarating things to do was run through the smoke to be part of that and to really start what became the swagger. You know, I keep hearing people talk to me about swagger. I really don't know what that is. All I know is this. You can't put swagger on a hat or you can't put it on a T-shirt. It's something that was created inside those walls with all of us players that were from every background on the planet. They're getting back to that a little bit now. They're recruiting more of Dade County and Broward County, and they're getting in. Listen to me, I'm an out-of-state guy, and I still think that they need to do a better job. You can't have Clemson, Alabama, and all those schools like Georgia having a pipeline into South Florida and not win. There's a reason they're winning. I mean, there's 37 guys on those three teams on their rosters. Would those kids have to stay in South Florida for the University of Miami to get back to where they need to get back to?
We've got the great Dan Cilio with us here on the Fours Up podcast talking some Miami. Dan, when we have you on, I have to bring up the 1986 team. And I was old enough to remember it. You know, I was in my, you know, 10 or 11 years old. Miami was everything to me. And there's a reason I fell in love with the school living down there. And it was what you guys did. It was you walked on the field and it's Jerome Brown and Winston Moss and other guys looking at Oklahoma saying, I ain't scared of you, bitch. And Oklahoma shit in their pants when they saw Miami walk on the field. 33-3 were soon for 3 years. Miami beat them all three times. He's worked hold on the U documentary. Like, what was it like for you, an out-of-state guy, walking in and being a part of that group?
Man, I tell you, you know, and you bring a great point up, because if you're an out-of-state kid, I mean, like Tessa Verde and all of us that were from out of state, you had to start. I mean, you just couldn't be some dude, because they wanted those scholarships to go to local kids, because they had Booker T. Washington. There was a kid who was a sophomore, was a five-star kid. They'd give a scholarship to a three-star kid just so they could land that kid 2 years later. So for me walking into that place, man, I'll never forget. I came from Maryland, and I mean, look, it was great. I won an ACC championship my freshman year. I was a backup as an 18-year-old on Boomer Esiason's 83 team that won the ACC. But I'll tell you what, 9 wins, that's not something I was looking for. And when I got to Miami, man, it was just a different world. Everything mattered. It was all about winning, and it was all about being accountable. And then when you stepped on the field, I got to tell you, man, you know, when Jerome Brown and I were stepping on the field, you saw fear in people's faces. I mean, it was legitimate. These guys really feared us, and what I loved about it was is that Jimmy let us talk shit, before the games all the time. Someone asked me what I thought of Brian Bosworth. I said he's the most overrated player in the history of college football. He couldn't make our team. I go, that guy could not make our team. And we're talking like that. This is before the game. And Jimmy would come up to me and goes, why are you doing that? I go, because, coach, you know why? You'll find weakness. Sammy Smith, I said the guy would fumble three times in a game because I don't think he has the courage to go through our defensive line. Sure enough, he put the ball on the carpet three times and we crushed him. I mean, we really backed up. I mean, I posted an article on my Twitter page. It says, Silio backed his big mouth up versus Oklahoma. Man, I talked so much shit before those guys. And you know what we were really fans of? Was that during that time, Angelo Dundee would come over to our practice fields and he would bring Muhammad Ali with him, or he would bring Sugar Ray Leonard over because Jimmy loved boxers, or he'd bring Roberto Duran or the Beast Mugabe. He loved bringing boxers over. And Ali came over and I just looked over at Jerome and Alonzo and Winston Moss and said, man, shit, we got 85 Ali's here, man. That guy was our biggest motivator for like how you wanted to prepare for a game. There was never in a moment where we ever walked into a game where we truly believed that we were going to get beat. It was just by how many points we were going to win these games. There was a different atmosphere being around those 85, 86, and 87 teams. I mean, I know the 2001 and 2 teams everyone looks at, and that's what Miami sells. But what really poured the cement on our program was what we did. I mean, the shit talking we did, the winning we did, the fighting we did, the fact that people hated our guts every place we went. I mean, dude, we walked into West Virginia one year, and we scored 30 points on them in the first 14 minutes. And I'll never forget, we got into the buses, we're leaving Morgantown, and these rednecks start rocking the bus. Jimmy got up and said, hey, man, brothers to the middle of the bus. I mean, these people legitimately, I said, and I was on the bus going, hey, you guys are on your own. But it was that kind of environment, man. It was really great. It was special. And there's not a month that goes by that I don't miss Jerome. Jerome was just a really great player to play next to. And we dominated, man. Me and him just... I mean, I personally think we're the two best defensive techniques that they've had in a long time. I think we're the best two defensive tackles that they had as a combo in that school's history.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with what you're saying there. And I want to ask you about the current defensive line that Miami's going to trot out this season. It's long been said that 1986 defensive line was the best in school history. We had you and Jerome Brown and Danny Stubbs and Bill Hawkins. What do you think about
that? Hey, don't forget the backups and Cortez and Russell Maryland and Greg Mark and Willis Pegues and Jimmy Jones. And I mean, there wasn't a guy that was on that defensive group that didn't play in the National Football League or who wasn't drafted in the top three rounds. I mean, the whole backup. I mean, we had a guy was a backup that turned out to be the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. As a defensive tackle, and me and Jerome taught him. So that whole group was special. So what I'm seeing now with these guys, look, the 15 kid who I really like, I like him a lot. I like Greg. I think he's going to be somebody who reminds me a little bit of Danny Stubbs. But the key is going to be this. I mean, that rotating stuff they do, I understand it. I mean, for me and Jerome, coming out of games was you had to be somebody special. I don't think you could just rotate. I had 100 tackles in 86, or about 94 tackles, counting the bowl game, okay? Jerome was hurt a little bit. He had about 80 tackles. Play a lot of football downs, man. You're playing about 60. You better be good. I'm not just putting a guy in because he plays on that D-line. When you played for Jimmy Johnson, you earned your time. Maybe you took some reps away from me. Maybe you took some reps away from Jerome. But I don't know they have the depth, but the first four guys look pretty good. Depth is something you need if you're going to win a national championship, though.
Dan, I was really critical of Coach Diaz a year ago, and I was really critical of Coach Rick. Covering him here in Atlanta for as long as I did, I kind of knew what to expect with him. the leash obviously was given to him, and he made changes that Al Golden's, you know, pain in the rear end ass was too afraid to do. Is Manny the right guy right now?
I'll say this to you. I think he's done a really good job this offseason at keeping the Wolves away from him and also recruiting. I think what he's done is he's won a lot of people's, how about this, a mulligan. His mulligan got a little bit stronger with the type of kids that he's bringing into the program now. And he's also sufficing many of the people in the local community there that they're recruiting locally. The old adage, recruiting the state of Miami. You know, so, I mean, he's, to me, he's earned that opportunity. But with this roster and with that schedule, I personally think that schedule's weak. If they don't win 10 ball games this year, I'll look at that and go, okay, it ain't going to get any easier as you move on down the line. By the way, softening the schedule so you could beat Notre Dame, that's not something I'm looking at when you're trying to get into a playoff and you got to go against Clemson and Ohio State. I'll say this. We are light years away from Clemson, Ohio State, and places like Alabama right now. We don't have the depth like we used to. And most importantly, we don't have the skill set guys any longer like we used to. I mean, people used to just knock themselves out to want to play quarterback at Miami. Okay, now, when's the last time we had a top three rounder go at the quarterback position? Shit, I can't remember the last quarterback that was drafted in the top three rounds. Well, Craig Erickson?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking Craig.
I mean, so when we don't have a signal caller, and today, you got to have a spread offense guy. So we let Lamar Jackson and we let players like that and Teddy Bridgewater out of South Florida and let them go somewhere else to star. And those guys are the faces now of the NFL. There's something wrong with the recruiting process. So back to Manny. I think Manny gets a hall pass. 6-7 blows out loud. There's no excuse for that at that program with the type of players that they have. There's no excuse for that. And by the way, that sideline celebrating shit, that stuff's got to stop. I mean, you're celebrating on the sidelines after you score a touchdown and you get a lead, and a team ends up rolling you over in the fourth quarter. Bro, you ain't won shit yet. Going to the FruitLoop.com bowl is not winning, okay? I mean, seriously. These guys go to a bowl game that has blue carpet on it. I'd have looked at Jimmy and said, fuck that. I'm not going to show up for that. You can go there to that. I'd have beat everyone's ass, and everyone in my locker room would have fought these dudes. You don't go to the FruitLoop.com bowl and call that a success.
Yeah. Yeah, you. I mean, you touched on the idea of swagger, and I'm using air quotes over here earlier, and I've been on this podcast, you know, saying that I think one of the issues with our program right now is that Manny was guilty of this last year, and I think a lot of the players have been, where they think the swagger is style before substance. And I just hate that, man. I hate, you know, that we want to dance first, and we want to roll up on yachts, and we want to, you know, crash the Florida State coaching clinics before there's any successes. You know, so I'm hoping that Manny learned from that. He's been a lot quieter this offseason. But I point to the quote from Michael Irvin where he, you know, he talks about swagger being the fact that you guys were running, you know, wind sprints on the beach in combat boots. Yeah. And I want to get your take on that idea.
Well, here, I'll give you a great example of Michael Irvin training. Michael Irvin had a stopwatch around his neck, like he was Flavor Flav. You know what it said on it? It said 4-5. And I go to him, I go, why are you running the way you're running? He'd run a mile frontwards, a mile backwards after practice every day. And I go, why do you do this? And our practices were insane. And he go, I'm 4-5, I'm in the Hall of Fame. This guy wasn't thinking about being just a good – this guy was thinking about being a Hall of Famer when he was 17. Swagger? That thing is so dumb. I mean, swagger, like I said, it can't be a t-shirt and a hat. It just can't be. Okay. I can't believe that we have taken what we have done and we've put it on a t-shirt and we have cheapened it so much that we fucking sell it like it's a commodity now. And people show up at Miami and think that because you wear the shirt, you got swagger. we become the Dallas Cowboys. Being a Dallas Cowboy nowadays, I think those Cowboy guys think it's better just to be a Cowboy starter and to win. I think they'd rather just be a star. It's so some of the things that we have with our players, and we're Miami Hurricane. We're in the fraternity. Hey, we're bro, you're in the fraternity at 6 and 7? Not my fraternity. I know. It took about 12 years for us to lose 7 games. I don't know what fraternity you're talking about, but we, you know, we've had one 10-win season in 16 years. I mean, hey, you know, 9-3. You know what? I got thrown off the air in Miami because of the way I'm talking right now. Because I told Al Golden, I said, this guy's killing our program. This guy doesn't know shit about it. This guy's telling me that he's recruiting guys in New Jersey, building championships through New Jersey. I'm like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? You know, this guy didn't know dick how to build that program or what that program was about. And he ran it into the toilet. And again, 6-7, I'm hearing you guys. I'm with you. That team better go 10-2 this year, man, and be a factor on a New Year's Day bowl game and not in some shit bowl. You can't be in the shitbowl.com. It's not working for me.
Yeah.
No, it's not working for me either. And, you know, it's funny because, Dan, I listened even up here. I used to listen to your show because you were one of the people that kept it real down there, and that's what everybody's always appreciated about you. And I do the same thing. Golden, yeah. True story. Hey,
man, if you know this, then if you're keeping it real, man, your PD's knocking on your door every day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, there's a reason I got whacked in Atlanta, and it had a lot to do with the same thing because I kept it too real up here when it came to Georgia and Georgia Tech and everybody else. True story. Al Golden is the first person to ever block me on Twitter because I kept talking about his little butt buddy Mark D'Onofrio so much and the fact that he wouldn't fire him. But to get off him, I want to ask you something to kind of piggyback on what you were talking about, and I'm with you. The touchdown rings are fucking idiotic. You're running to the sideline down 28-7 against Virginia Tech when you catch a Hail Mary to put on rings. The chain was cool the first year because it was organic. But here's what I asked you to kind of piggyback on all of this. How do we get the kids away from that? Because Alabama's kids still bust their ass. Clemson's kids still bust their ass. Ohio State's kids, as much as I hate to praise them, they bust their ass. How does Miami get back to busting their ass?
Discipline. Discipline. Let me tell you, man, you walk into a Jimmy Johnson practice, and let me just tell you how we did it. Okay, our first thing, we'd stretch. Then we'd run 30 minutes of pursuit. We'd do pursuit drills for 30 minutes. Then Jimmy would just look at us all and go 9-on-7. Then he would go inside drill, and we had inside drill for 2 hours. And how about this? Top draft choices versus top draft choices going head-to-head, and Vinny Testaverde and Kozar and all these guys that I'm playing. These are all guys that are going to be top 10 draft choice, and we're just smashing heads for 2 hours, smashing heads. And you're in that place, and you're practicing your ass off. And then get this. You know there's a guy behind you that could easily take your job if you get hurt and you put your hand up. It was a constant competition every single day. They've got to have more competition. They can't be given shit. Man, you have to earn every single seat you have in that place. I think we now get into a culture. Maybe I'm old man Dan. Maybe I'm sounding too fucked up here. I said, but, you know, when you guys start bringing me back to where that was, it's taken me 35 years to get away from that guy. Who I was, because when you were in that room, man, dude, you competed every moment in your life. I'll tell you guys a quick story about competing in love. I'm in the room there. Jimmy was on a recruiting trip, and there was some sort of friction down in the weight room. This is chronicled in Drew Rosenhaus's book. I'm sitting right next to George Myers Jr., and we're talking, and Michael Irvin and him had some dust up at the weight room. Michael comes over, and we're in this tiered, in our team meeting room. We're sitting down. Michael goes like this from high. Hey, man, hey, you know, puts his hand up. George puts his hand up, and Michael drops a hammer right on his chin and breaks 3 of his teeth right in front of me and fucking knocked his teeth out. And I'm sitting there looking at this, dude, not that we didn't love one another, brothers fight is what it was. But man, that place was filled with tension, competition. Nobody was given an inch because everybody wanted an inch. And I don't see that. I see guys with gold chains and celebrating, and I just don't see the discipline, man. I mean, hey, Jimmy let us do whatever we wanted. You know why? Because we won. We could talk shit as long as we won. Would we be able to wear the chain? Oh, Jimmy would have locked that chain up after that first 10-win season they had. If they didn't win, you go 6-7. You think you're breaking that out with him? Never happened. Never happened. Butch Davis asked me what I thought. Butchie asked me, man. He texts me and he goes, hey, so what do you think of that stupid chain? I went, no comment. I go, no comment. He goes, oh, I can see you and Jerome wearing it. I go, man, you wouldn't find that thing near me, man. I'd give it to the water boy. I ain't wearing that thing, man. Fucking, I want anybody to think I'm being celebrated for something that is a common at my place. You know what that is? Whipping your ass. Wearing a chain makes it seem like it's something special. Screw that. This is common. Winning is common here. It doesn't seem to be common there anymore.
Yeah. So, I mean, does that culture come top down, or is it everywhere? You know, is it the coach that sets the tone, or is it that every single person on the roster, coaching staff, has a say in it?
I'll give you a great that's a great question. I'll give you something that was told to me from Dean Smith years ago. You recruit people that have your personality because it makes it easier for you to connect. And one of the reasons why Dean had pretty much almost the same kind of personality guys in his basketball program was because they were a lot like him, hardworking fuckers, hard guys that just, you know, wanted nothing to do but win, didn't care about stats. Now, look, with that process, sometimes you don't recruit everyone. Maybe a kid's, that's what made Jimmy so special. Jimmy could recruit a person like Vinny Testaverde, but turn around and recruit a person that can have a little edge to him and bring a guy in. Winston Moss, for instance, somebody like that. He could coach those kind of guys. He's great at it, okay? There's a skill set. Like Phil Jackson, I learned a lot with Last Dance, reminds me of Jimmy a lot. Phil can coach Dennis Rodman and Michael Jordan. Do you know how many people can't do that? Like Larry Brown would have troubles with Rodman. He'd have no trouble with Jordan. Yeah, but you're missing out on what you could get out of Rodman, one of the greatest defenders of all time. That's what Jimmy was able to do. He could coach Troy Aikman and coach Michael Irvin. Two different personalities, and it starts at the top. Man, if you don't believe your coach has a message that you can win, you can't win. You can't win. You can't give a player latitude until they prove it to them and they earn it. You just can't go, oh, he's my guy, I recruited him. Fuck that. That guy's got to go out and produce. Miami last year was the worst offensive football team I have ever seen in my time being a Hurricane fan. That was awful. They were never in a game offensively. They were never explosive. They made no plays whatsoever, plus 20, barely any. And when they did, they were behind or they were ahead, and then the defense would give up like a sieve in the secondary. They've gotten better. That side of the football is getting better every time, every year. And I do believe the D-line looks good, but it's going to take more than the D-line. So it's just the whole culture thing. It went from Howard to Jimmy to Dennis to Larry, and those guys never messed with the formula. Then when Larry started messing with the formula, personally, I think Larry Coker helped destroy the University of Miami by firing Don Solinger and all them guys. Mm. It's the pipeline that we had into all the high schools. That's why those other programs were able to come into South Florida. And ever since Larry Coker, at the back end of his coaching career, Miami has had, I don't know, five coaches, and they've all kind of been mediocre.
Yeah.
Is there ever a chance that Miami gets back to where it was? Because, you know, Dan, I always look and I go, every year people up here give me crap. Oh, Miami sucks. They're irrelevant. I said, look, first of all, Miami's never irrelevant. We may not be good right now, but we're always relevant. Can they ever get back to that national title culture?
How about this? You tell them, guys, take a look at the last 4 years of the Pro Football Hall of Fame with more to come. I'll talk to you about being relevant, okay? I don't see any Alabama guys rolling into the Hall of Fame anytime soon. Maybe Julio Jones. The rest of them dudes got a long way to go. Can they ever get back? Again, another great question. Well, remember something. David Shula destroyed Alabama football. Destroyed it. I think, if I'm not mistaken, you guys can correct me, I think Nick Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe his first year as head football coach at Alabama. You think they were saying we'll ever get back to being what Bear did? Well, I think he's taking that from where they were to maybe even a tad bit better than what Bear Bryant's doing. So look at what Ogeron is doing. These guys, Ogeron and Saban, are not great X's and O's coaches. Like Jimmy was not an X and O coach. You know what he did? He hired great assistant coaches, and he knew how to evaluate talent, means recruiting. If they can get back to doing that, hiring good assistants. Now, again, this is going to be a challenge for Manny because Miami doesn't have the money LSU and Alabama have to hire these assistant coaches. You guys got to remember, look at my coaching staff. Butch Davis, Dave Wannstedt, Dave Campo. I mean, Gary Stevens. I was just tweeting out to Tommy Tuberville. Tuberville and Chuck Pagano were our GAs checking bed checks. That's how they were GAs not getting paid, doing bed checks. And he became the coach at Auburn. And I mean, we had an amazing coaching staff. And I don't know if you're going to be able to duplicate that part of it because, you know, what Jimmy was able to produce with all those great coaches, I took for granted. We had great coaches at Miami when I was there. And, you know, you can say whatever you want about the 0-1 team. That 0-1 team are not even in the name, not even in the same room with my coaching staff.
Yeah. So what you were saying about, you know, convincing guys that there's a winnable culture, you know, that's the head coach's responsibility and stuff like that. It made me think about the current recruiting class that we have. We have a lot of momentum right now. We've landed some big name guys. You know, I think we're like eighth overall right now. And if we land a few recruits, we could push past Florida and some of these other big schools. Does that at least give you, you know, some good feelings about Manny Diaz that after a season that we go less than 500, he still has the guys on the team and guys in high school believing in his vision?
In today's landscape, I've got to put myself in today's landscape with the context of what your question was there. So I'll say yes. But when I was at the school, I don't ever remember winning recruiting wars. I don't ever remember being in the top 20. I don't ever remember being considered. Russell Maryland was recruited by two schools, Toledo and Miami. I don't remember us ever being and having conversations about winning the recruiting wars. I just remember winning games and national championships.
Yeah.
I don't ever remember that stuff. I know it's different today, okay? Because it was easy for us because a lot of people didn't know some of the kids that were in South Florida. Because you know why? Guys like Lou Holtz or Joe Paterno, you think they're going to go into African-American communities in Overtown and Liberty City to recruit? That'd be no. See, Dabo and Saban are smart. They go into those communities. They make friends with Luther Campbell. They go in there because they know they're going to pull out some of the greatest talent in the country. Those other coaches, I mean, it'd be hard-pressed if you go back and look and see any South Florida guys that were on those Penn State teams or on those Notre Dame teams. There weren't. Because those people didn't recruit. So it's different today. So when I see that we're moving into the top 10, that means to me this. That means they're in Palmetto, Booker T, Edison. They're going into those high schools in Miami, and they're recruiting, and they're trying to build the bridge back up again. So that's what gives me hope is that, look, I'll take a 3-star kid over a 5-star kid out of New Jersey any day, because you got 7 state championship high school football programs from South Florida. I can guarantee you the kids in South Florida, if I draft or if I recruit 20 kids and I recruit 20 kids nationally, I'm going to have a better success rate with the kids in Miami because they play great football. Look, Georgia, Florida, Louisiana, Ohio, Texas, California, New Jersey in some aspects. Those are all great hotbeds for high school football, okay? You're in those areas, especially Florida, Georgia, Bama, Louisiana. You're recruiting around in there. We get Ed Reed out of Louisiana. You're going to win a lot of games.
So,
Dan, we love having you on. I was going to say, make sure before we get out of here, at Dan Cilio Show is where you can follow him on Twitter. Where else do we find you? Where can people check out Dan Cilio right now?
Yeah, man. If you go to my Twitter page, I have a Twitch show that I'm doing for Amazon right now. We have some really great news coming up about a national radio show that we're getting ready to launch. I hope it's Monday that we're going to be on in multiple markets. But as you guys know, it's radio. Mm-hmm. So radio sometimes turns you into liars. So I want to make sure that we launch on Monday. So just check out my Twitter page at Dan Cilio Show. You'll be able to follow along and see what's going on. But it looks like we're going to be able to launch in Dallas, Portland, Minneapolis, Seattle, and I think maybe a city in Florida yet to be determined. So looks like we're going to get out of the gate here. I'm really looking forward to it. It's the first time, guys, that, you know, I made a gamble here that, you know, with the current landscape the way it is, there's not a lot of high paid salaries out there right now. I can own a show and be in control of my own show and deal with my own advertisers, and people who bitch will be bitching basically to me because I own the show. That's kind of where I want to go right now. I kind of have to dig for my own gold, if you guys get where I'm going with this.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got one last question for you before we head out. While you were talking, I was thinking of, I guess that period of time, late Randy Shannon era, early Al Golden era, where we were producing a lot of NFL talent. I mean, we were having, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 NFL guys put out every year. But we're only going 7-6. Right. I wanted to get your take on that, whether that goes to the coaching staff type of stuff that you're talking about, or whether you think that could have been from a lack of competition and practice, you know, that there wasn't the pressure in the locker room creating those diamonds till they get into the NFL. I just wanted to hear your take on that.
Well, whatever has happened to some of these kids who are getting this advice to leave the University of Miami early, like this Kaya kid. Kid leaves and he don't even get drafted. Some of these kids don't even get drafted. I don't know who's advising them. I mean, it goes back to putting the t-shirt on and the jersey on, thinking you're going to be a first round. You know, when I left Miami, I was the 56th player taken. I was disappointed. I was like, damn. Okay. I was projected to be a top 10 kid and I'm a 50. I thought that was awful. Okay, I mean, I did. I looked at that, and I'm like, that's really shitty. You know, and I'm looking at it now. Today, it's a second rounder, and I'm like, I don't know if that – when's the last time you had a second-round defensive tackle drafted? I'm going to tell you what happened with Randy. Here's what happened with Randy, man. Randy was trying to get the kids from the inner cities, but the admissions and the president of the university and the athletic director didn't want those kids going to University of Miami. And then all of a sudden, when you had that dickhead Nevin Shapiro floating around the program, and he's giving money to the program, and Donna Shalala's there with an $87,000 check in her hand, they thought it would be better to build up the basketball program, sell the University of Miami logo, and who gives a shit if Miami goes 8-4? Doesn't matter. We're going to be making money anyway. Who cares, man, what Miami's doing? This is about building the basketball program. If you notice, the basketball program has had more luxury since we've been in the ACC than what UM has ever had. Miami has, I mean, I've won an ACC championship, which is crazy. And nobody on the team has ever done it.
That is pretty crazy.
I'll show you this. Yes. I mean, I got a 1983 ACC championship trophy here, and nobody at UM has. How's that possible? Randy had a lot of problems with admissions and people just not allowing him. And Randy got caught up in the business end of it. Randy Shannon should be a head football coach again, and I believe he will be. He's at UCF now. He was on that thing we did with Luther Campbell about a month ago, and it was great to see him. He looks great, and I think he'll get another opportunity. But Randy was taught a really big lesson. Don't get caught up in the politics of trying to get kids in. See, at Alabama, Saban wants 20 kids. Alabama qualifies all 20. Okay, mm-hmm. You go to Miami, you throw 20 kids in front of admissions, you can have about 11 of them.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, awesome stuff, man. It's great to talk to you, bro. We'll have to catch up next time I'm out. I'm taking it you're still in Southern California. When I get out there, we're going to have a couple.
Absolutely. Guys, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much, guys.
Yep. Thank you, and go Canes, man.
Go Canes.
Perfect, man. Dude, that was cool. I love hearing from Dan. He's a guy that I'll always listen to when he's on. You brought it up during the interview. He shoots straight, and I love that. I love that about him, and I also love that about you. That's specifically why I wanted you to help me on this episode. Because the episodes that you've been on with me and Marsh have really gained a lot of traction. There is a lack of people who tell it like it is in the Miami Hurricanes program or around the program.
Here's the thing. I was never good enough to play. I was never a Dan Cilio. And I played wide receiver. I know you look at me now and probably don't think that. My high school teammate actually played at Miami. He was a recruit under Dennis Erickson, and when Butch came, he kind of got pushed out of the program because he was a small running back, and Butch wanted big running backs. So I knew what it took to be around and be a Miami Hurricane. I just wasn't good enough to do so. What I also looked at with this, and guys like Dan, I think it gets muted. And don't get me wrong, I love Hockman and Crowder. I think they do a great job down there. I've worked in radio. I've been on a flagship. You know, I worked for the Falcons for 10 years, traveling with their team. There is a sense of getting muted by the team that you're a flagship of. And I think Miami, and it's part of the reason there were guys that wouldn't come on my show anymore in Atlanta because I kept it too real. I talk shit about Al Golden to the point where legitimately he blocked me on Twitter for talking so much crap about him and Mark D'Onofrio. I remember having it out with, probably Tim Reynolds of the AP years ago, where he was like, you got to give these guys time. I was like, no, I know what Miami football looks like. And this isn't fucking Miami football. This is shit. And Dan says it like it is. There's a reason Dan's not on QAM. You know, was he controversial? Yeah. Did he say some things that may have been right on the edge? Absolutely. In our business, you have to do that. I can't sit back as a guy that literally, I think I have 9 University of Miami tattoos on my body. 9. I just got a new one 2 weeks ago. I can't sit back and in my room, and I promise you, I'm sitting in my studio right now. I have a Jerome Brown jersey. I have a Sean Taylor jersey. I have a Michael Irvin jersey, a Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and a Warren Sapp jersey. They're all framed hanging in my office. You know why? Those are the guys I looked up to. The shit I see right now is not Miami football. It's not even close. And Jordan, you want to know what pisses me off? I'll write articles for State of the U. And obviously, I'm going to try to keep them somewhat positive because I hope the team does well. I look at that schedule, and I think Dan said it best. I looked at that schedule this year. Who the hell is supposed to beat us on that schedule? The 86 Miami team would have ran through that schedule by 50 points a game. There wouldn't have been a team within 5 touchdowns of the 86 team.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I was on Sirius XM Slam Radio yesterday morning, The Amigo with Larry Million, and he asked me what I thought about this season, this upcoming season, and I said 10-2, and you know, I'm not trying to bag on Larry's opinion here because I think everything he said was valid. you know, but he thought I was crazy. And he's like, I don't know, man, this is like an 8-4 team. I think we're underestimating Michigan State, and, you know, FSU is never a gimme. And I mean, just going along with what you said, man, like, how far have we really fallen that we're worried about a Michigan State team with a new head coach? That, you know, he might end up being a good coach. I can't think of his name right now. He just came from Colorado.
Mel Tucker.
Mel Tucker, that's right. But I mean, he kind of sucked last year at Colorado. So even though there's a lot of time for him to become a good head coach, like, that's not a guy that puts the fear into me in his first season at Michigan State. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, none of these guys should put fear into you. You know, again, you grew up in a little bit different era than I did. I went, you know, my first time watching college football was 1981. You know, Miami, or it was 1980. Miami went 9-3 with Jim Kelly and Howard Schnellenberger. I remember watching the 1983 national championship game as a 9-year-old. I remember going for like years when Miami would lose. I legitimately would boohoo cry because I was never used to Miami losing. Like, that's how good Miami was. When they lost, it hurt. You know, I get mad now. I get more pissed off that I'm watching a mediocre ass football team. And I'll never forget, you say you kind of came into the program around 2001. Living in Atlanta, we had a Miami, we still have a Miami club. But back in 2001, before TV was as readily available as it is now, our sports bar, we had Sideline Sports Bar and Grill in Atlanta, which has been closed for 10 years at least. That used to be the Miami bar. We'd be in there legitimately 300 deep. And, you know, you'd go in there and it would just be a fraternity of expecting us to go in and kick people's ass. And I remember sitting at the table because the bar was shared with Michigan and Colorado. And I looked at all of our friends and I go, can you imagine being a fucking Colorado fan? They're going 6-6 and they're happy to beat, you know, whoever the hell they were playing. They beat Kansas State and they're happy. I'm like, I can't even imagine being a fan of a 6-6 program. Now we're the 6-6 program, and it's disappointing. It pisses me off, you know, every year. And I, you know, I live 60 miles from Athens, Georgia, and I have these yahoos up here going, oh, you guys are irrelevant. You're stupid, you and this. I was like, your sorry ass program hasn't won a national title since I was peeing on myself. I'm 45 years old. They haven't won since 1980. How can you talk about our program? But when you have 16 years of shit, we deserve to get talked about.
Absolutely. And you know, you're saying that, you know, just as a child that you'd cry when we would lose. And to show you the difference in my experience is, you know, for the LSU game in 2018 and then the Florida game last year, like, I had opportunities to go. In both instances, I didn't have a lot of money. You know what I mean? I didn't have a lot of spending money, so it would have been a big sacrifice for me to make the trip out from Utah. And dude, I've been conditioned to the point that if we're playing on primetime TV, if we're playing in a marquee game, like, we get our faces beat in. Like, that is my experience. The only time that hasn't happened is both in the 2017 season with Virginia Tech and then the week after with Notre Dame. Other than that, it's been a clean sweep of us getting our teeth kicked in on national TV. And so, you know, I thought to myself, like, why am I going to set myself back this far financially to go watch us get, you know, the crap kicked out of us on, you know, primetime in Dallas or in Orlando? And, you know, I was right both times. So, I mean, you can call me a bad fan, but at the same time, like, I made the right decision for where I'm at in my life. You know, it's sad to think that, like, people might, that's where they're at. You know, that's what we've been conditioned to think is if we're playing a ranked team on the night game, then it's bad news, man.
And that sucks. And, you know, I hate it. My son, and I always bring up his name because he was my number one passion in life is the University of Miami. My son's name, his biological name is Kane. It's C-A-N-E. My son has got to see in 11 years of life, 1 year that dad was truly happy. You know, 2017, it was the year that I got married and my wife got to go to a game with me. And I get emotional thinking about the year because there was so much good happened in my life that year. Yeah. You know, we lost the Super Bowl, which sucked, but I got to work a Super Bowl. So that football season was so special. And you know, when they're sitting at 10-0, I'm pinching myself going, oh my God, Miami's back at, we're the number two team in the nation. You know, we got votes to be the number one team in the nation after we beat Virginia, after a week after beating Notre Dame. We were getting votes as the number one team in the nation. And I'm not going to lie, there were four or five games that year. I flat out shed tears at the end because it had been 16 years of not being able to see that. And, you know, having my wife and my kids sit there and watch the games with me and always be like, why are you so emotional? Why does this mean so much? And I'm like, you have no idea what Miami did to save my life many times as a kid. Uh-huh. You know, I grew up in South Florida. There's a lot of bad things you can get into. Mm-hmm. I ran the streets and, you know, it wasn't always bad. But when Miami played, I stopped whatever I was doing to be at home. I always tell Joe Zagacki this story, and Joe's one of my good friends now in the radio business. Don Bailey Jr. the same way, and they're obviously the play-by-play and the color guys for the Canes. When I first met Joe, I was in awe, like, oh my God, this is Joe Zagacki. This is the guy that calls Miami games. The only place I could get reception when I lived in West Palm Beach from it was 610 WIOD was their home station at the time. I'd have to climb on the roof of my house. So imagine it's September. It's 98 degrees in Florida, and you're sitting on top of a shingle roof trying to listen to a transistor radio. That's where I go to listen to Miami. Mm-hmm. Sonny Hirsch was the play-by-play guy before that, you know, and that's where I would go to watch Miami or listen to Miami games because they weren't on TV every week. We didn't have ESPN. You know, you got the CBS game of the week. You probably saw Miami play three times. They just meant that much to me, and that's why it hurts me so bad right now to see the program where it's at. It hurts me so bad to badmouth the team because I love the kids. I don't know any of the kids personally. I love anybody that puts on that helmet. You know, I love anybody that works for that university. And I want guys like you and guys like Marshall to be able to experience what old school Canes got to experience. I'm sure you could tell the passion with Dan Cilio right there. What the program means to him 35 years later. I've been blessed working in radio to meet a lot of my heroes. Warren Sapp, I don't call him a friend, but Warren Sapp would recognize me and give me a hug because he's been on my radio show four or five times. Radio Row 2 years ago, Warren Sapp went on two shows. He went on Big Tigger's show, which Big Tigger was on BET forever, and now he works locally in Atlanta. And he goes, John, you know I'm coming to sit down with you. And he did 30 minutes with Rick Kamla and I because we're Canes, or I was a Cane, Rick wasn't. And that's the stuff I want you guys to get to experience, not the shit that you have to go through now.
Yeah, man, it's tough. Because, I mean, I remember, you know, being in middle school, so probably 12, 13, 14. And I would just sit at the computer all day and watch videos, you know, old games and interviews and stuff. And I'd just like look up in the sky at night and wonder what it was like during those times. I mean, it sucks that I didn't really get to be a part of it. I kind of caught the residual, you know what I mean? Because in the NFL, guys like Ray Lewis and Ed Reed and Reggie Wayne and Andre Johnson and Edgerrin James and, you know, Clinton Portis, Willis McGahee, Frank Gore, those guys were all still dominating, you know, Jeremy Shockey. So I caught some of the residual. Like, I think people my age can still understand the culture a little bit. Maybe it's not the same. But I feel like I get it, if that makes sense. But I mean, you're right, man. I'm a huge Utah Jazz fan. My family's had season tickets my whole life. You know, I eat, breathe and sleep Utah Jazz during the NBA season. But if you were to ask me, like, you know, you get one championship for one team this year, who would it be? Like, no doubt in my mind, it's Miami Hurricanes. And I think that just shows that there's something special about the program, you know, that I wouldn't even think twice about.
There's something very special. And I love to use my experiences here in Atlanta. You know, we're a Southern-based community here, Atlanta, Georgia. It's very transient. There's people everywhere. Rick Kamla, I love my former co-host. Me and him got along great. He was not a college football fan per se when we first started doing the radio show. And, you know, he would always tell me, he was like, man, you just love Miami. And I said, trust me, every time we're out on radio remotes, watch Miami fans. They're going to show up to meet me. Not that I was anybody special. I'm just some dude on the radio who loves the U. And he would always tell us, Rick Kamla, born and raised in Minnesota, NBA TV, now living in Houston. Rick would always look at me and go, the cult. He called it the cult. He said the cult is real. Because anywhere we would go, guys would walk, they'd throw up the U. Guys would come to meet me decked out in Miami gear. That's what the program has always been about. I don't give a shit about Alabama and they put 100,000 people in the stands. People want to make attendance jokes. Kiss my ass. Go back and really watch Miami in the 80s and find out if we had great attendance. Because we didn't. We had great attendance when Penn State came to town or Oklahoma. When they played TCU and other candy-ass schools, nobody was at the fucking games. They weren't. The Orange Bowl was in, you know, in Little Havana. People weren't going there on a Saturday to see us beat up Temple. It's the same thing now. The city's never changed. The difference was we won back then. And to go to your question about who – I want to see one more title in my life. Like, I'm 45 years old. I've seen five of them. We should have won at least three more, maybe four more. I just want to see one more. I want to celebrate with my wife and kids. That's what I want to see. I love the Miami Heat. Fuck, I've seen three titles in there. Let the Miami Hurricanes win one, and I'll be a happy man. I could go to my grave at that point.
You're blessed, man. I'm being a Jazz fan and a Hurricanes fan since, you know, 2002. I mean, honestly, I was too young to watch the I've seen the 2001 championship game probably a dozen or two dozen times on the internet since. I didn't watch it live because I was only like 7 years old. I haven't seen the Hurricanes or the Jazz win a national title or, you know, or an NBA finals. And man, there are very, very few things in life that I wouldn't give to at least see Miami win one. So,
you know what sucks for me? I'm not one of the guys. I know there's a lot of Miami fans out there. There are a Miami football fan and a Duke basketball fan. No. I love everything that wears that U. Mm-hmm. I love the Miami baseball program. Like, I'm a guy that game one when they're playing Charleston Southern, I'm streaming WVUM to listen to the game. I'm watching on ESPN3. My wife wants to fight me. Why the hell are you watching college baseball? Because it's Miami. We were supposed to win a fucking national title this year in baseball, but the damn coronavirus ripped that dream from us. I've always said I wanted to go to Omaha one time and go watch Miami play in the College World Series. I was going to go this year. I have plenty of time. Screw it. I was going to be in Nebraska for 4 or 5 days and watch us win a national title. That's all I want to see again. And I know fans out there are like, this guy's delusional and crazy. Now I'm just passionate. And I am crazy, but I'm crazy passionate about the team.
Yeah. No, I feel you, man. I'm actually not a college basketball fan very much. I'm actually I'm a pretty big college basketball detractor. I think it's like a watered down kind of crappy version of the game of basketball. But the only time that I give a crap about college basketball is when Miami has like a solid team. You know, the most I've ever been into college basketball was the Shane Larkin year that we won the ACC championship.
Yep.
And that was a fun season, man. And it was nice to have that. Just that feeling around the program, like all year round, I guess, you know, and translating it to different sports. I mean, maybe I should get more into the basketball team. I just don't really like college ball, but, man, it's fun. And like you said, it is, there's something about that U, you know, I have a letter that I got from their admissions, you know, when I was at high school. It was just an advertisement, you know, nothing special. But you better believe that it's in my nightstand, man. And I just pull it out and look at that envelope sometimes and just, you know, just like daydream about just how much I love the program. It's hard to explain. It's hard to quantify. But I mean, that's why we have the saying, right? It's a you thing you wouldn't understand, right? If you don't get it, then you just never will.
You never will. And our buddy, my buddy Armando, who lives down in Miami, you know, you guys follow him at Lakers Canes 305. Good friend of mine. Met him via Twitter. Ended up being friends with him and Cutler Ridge Labs and other all those guys. When Romello Brinson committed, Mondo tweeted out, Twitter will go crazy if Miami wins the national title. I said, no. Twitter's going to ban every one of us because I'm going to talk shit for 200 motherfucking days in a row, and I will tell every program around the country to kiss my orange and green ass because Miami wins the national title. You'll never be able to say another word to me.
Yeah. I agree, man. It's going to be fun. I mean, I'm sure people will block me on Facebook and Twitter, you know, anyone who's not a Canes fan. But, there's like a quasi rivalry out here. Just because everyone in Salt Lake City, we refer to the University of Utah as the U or the U of U. And that makes sense for our geographical thing. But, man, being the only Canes fan in my high school, like, I took a lot of crap for that, man. But I brought it on myself, right? I'd wear a T-shirt that said the real U with the Miami logo. I'd wear that probably four times a week, it seemed like. And there's a lot of kids that are going to be getting text messages from me if we ever win a title. I can tell you that much.
Well, what we can hope for now is that, you know, the recruiting classes are coming together. I'm 5 through 10 parts of my 10-part series breaking down the roster. What was interesting with the one I just released today at State of the U was breaking down the offensive line. And do I think the line's going to be good? No. I think they'll be better than last year. I mean, goddamn, I could have gone out and played better offensive line at 44 years old and 2 torn Achilles than some of the guys did a year ago. But what's great about the O-line this year is you have 2 really good freshmen coming in that you might be able to redshirt. You might be able to play Jalen Rivers and Isaiah Walker the 4 games and then sit them down. When's the last time we've had that luxury on the offensive line? Devon Donaldson, freshman, get in there. You know, Eric Flowers, freshman, get in there. Casey McDermott, you had to get him in there. So if Manny can build this thing the right way, and if you do go 10-2, 11-1 like you should, and get to an ACC title game, all of a sudden now you get the Jake Garcia's to flip. You get, you know, the Justin Flo's to go to Miami instead of Oregon. You get those kids in South Florida instead of Jerry Judy leaving to go to Alabama. They start staying home. But kids today, and it's one of the things Dan alluded to, kids today see results. It's no longer, hey, I'm going to Miami. The cool thing is to go to Miami because it's still Miami. But they see results. They go, hell, everybody's on national TV. I want to be playing in January in one of those 3 games that matter. And we got to get back to that.
Yeah, I agree, man. And, you know, in my prep for this interview today, I actually read your article on the 1986 Canes from State of the U, which was fantastic, by the way. But I made a comparison and I wrote down some ideas about it. I quickly realized talking to Dan that it probably wouldn't have gone over very well, you know, pitching it to him. But I actually see a lot of similarities. This is me a little bit with my tinfoil hat on. So maybe coincidences is a better word for it than similarities between the 2020 team and the 1986 team. This is the first time in 2 decades that we're going to have a Heisman caliber quarterback on the roster, which we did with Vinny. We're going to have a first round pass catcher. You know, we have an elite pass catcher with Brevin Jordan, which juxtaposes well with Michael Irvin. Not comparing the two. I'm just saying we finally have an elite pass catcher again with a Heisman caliber quarterback. We talked about it with Dan that we have we definitely have the best defensive line room that we've had probably since 1986. I might be missing a few other rooms in there, but, we're going to roll out one of our best rooms in a long time this year. And then, the last one that was more just for fun, but we got a Blades at cornerback again. So,
right.
you know, I don't think that would have gone over well with Dan, but, you know.
No, no, Dan would have squashed that, and rightly so. I get everything you're saying, because I do look at Gregory Russo, and I like what he brings. I like Quincy Roche. You know, I think Derek King, and I may have put this when I was talking about the quarterback room, we actually have a legitimate signal caller. And it's crazy. We haven't had a top three-round pick, and I don't think – Craig Erickson, if I'm not mistaken, got hurt and may have went in the fifth round. I'd have to go back and look. We haven't had a top three-round pick since Steve Walsh. And Steve Walsh was picked in the supplemental draft in 1988. Miami once was called quarterback U because you went from Kelly to Kozar to Testaverde to Walsh to Erickson to Toretta. Every one of those guys were stars in college football. After Toretta, it was Costa, Clement, Collins. What was my guy's name? Scott Covington, Kenny Kelly, before you got to Ken Dorsey. So you haven't had that guy. And Dorsey was a great college quarterback, but he had no pro prospects whatsoever. So I agree. We do have some frontline talent. The difference was, and Dan mentioned it, you talk about 86, you're going from Cilio and Brown to Russell Maryland and Willis Pegues and Greg Mark and Bill Hawkins. I mean, all of those dudes can play. Yeah. We got two great guys that we know can play in Russo and Roche. I hope that Jalen Phillips can play.
Yeah.
I hope that Nesta Silvera takes a step. Yeah. Outside of that, it's all hope. I don't know that those guys can play for sure.
You're right. And, you know, I wasn't around in 86, so I'm going to pose this as a question rather than telling you. But in 86, did we know what those guys on the bench would be? I mean, were they proven commodities, or is that more hindsight as 2020? Because, I mean, we do have Jafari Harvey coming off the bench and Jalen Phillips coming off the bench. I mean, 3 years from now, if they're both first-round picks, then the argument changes a little bit.
You know, it was tough because 1984 – Miami, long story short, Jimmy Johnson gets the job in 84, but he was forced to keep a lot of Howard Schnellenberger's staff. Well, they were running more of like a 5-2 defense back then. I know it sounds crazy to run that today, but so many teams ran the ball. You ran a lot more 5-2. Jimmy wanted to change to a 4-3 attacking defense in 84. The other coaches didn't want to. And the defense, if you go back and look at the 84 team, the defense cost them a national championship. They could score on anybody with Kozar and Eddie Brown and Melvin Bratton and Alonzo Highsmith and guys like that. The defense stunk. Well, Jimmy, he whacked all of them. They went 8-5. He fired all of them. I'm getting rid of all these clowns. So 85, the defense was better. I'll be honest. I was 9. So my memory, how good were they coming into the year? I don't know. You know, I can't give you a true, hey, this guy was going to be good. All I know is that rolling into the 86 National Championship game, that team had no business losing. And I could go even further. I know you're saying this may be one of the better rooms. Go look at 87. Go look at 88, 89, 90, 91, 94. You know, in 96, you had Kennard Lang and Kenny Holmes, who both ended up being first-round picks at DN. Go to the 2001 team where it was William Joseph, Andrew Williams, Jerome McDougal, Vince Wilfork was on the bench, Matt Walters. They've had some D-lines that were really, really deep and really, really stout. So this D-line's got a lot to live up to. And it's funny, I go back to Joe Zagacki. I'd asked him like 3 years ago when Shaq and Pink and Zach were sophomores. I said, could this be the Bermuda Triangle? And he goes, slow down. He goes, John, I love you. Slow down. Remember the Bermuda Triangle. That was Michael Barrow, Jesse Armstead, and Darren Smith. He goes, those guys single-handedly wrecked offenses. He goes, Shaq, Pink, and McLeod are not those guys yet. And they ended up not being them. No disrespect, but we got to earn it. Russo's got to do it against Alabama in a championship game or Clemson in an ACC title game. Roche's got to do it there before I'll even consider putting him on that pedestal.
Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, I definitely like am willing to go along with what you're saying. I mean, you were there, you know. So, but yeah, I think those comparisons were more just, you know, almost something fun. But I guess, you know, I should have known better with the intensity that Dan brings. That, you know, it's he doesn't mess around when he talks Miami.
And that's what you're supposed to do when you love this program. The way that we all do, we're going to bring the passion and bring the heat. And that's why, you know, you could say you guys are a, what, 6 months, less than a year podcast, and all of a sudden you're one of the top 10 football podcasts in the country. It's because Miami fans want to hear Miami content. And, you know, one of the things I wish I would have done 5 years ago is do this, is to give this venue to Miami fans and bring the passion. But that's why I love writing for Cam and State of the U, is just showing that, like, you know, I'll show you my passion week in and week out. And that's why I'll go on anywhere and talk Miami football. But congratulations to you guys for doing that as well.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. It's been a wild ride. I mean, it's crazy having a top 10 podcast for football. And then, you know, it felt like a big deal to me going on radio yesterday. Maybe it's not that big of a deal, but it's just kind of been a whirlwind, you know, because it's like 5 months of doing the same thing every week. You know, we're recording twice a week. I'm prepping 3 days a week and on top of a full-time job. And then didn't really feel like anything changed. It was just, we just blew up all of a sudden, you know? So it's pretty fun, man. And I'm pumped for the future. And, you know, I'm excited to get back to a point where we're having more fans on the podcast again. I think that's something that really made us great. Mm-hmm. You know, made a lot of great relationships out of that. And I think that builds towards what you're talking about is like the community of people that want the content. So I was talking to a Cane fan today. It was Kyler Collins in my DMs, and saying that, like, me and Marsh have both said we're excited to get back to having more fans. We love having the former players on, but just really, like, indulging that sense of community around the Miami program. So it's exciting times, man. But
that it is. That it absolutely is.
Yeah, I'm hoping that this team can live up to it, because I think we're all getting a little bit anxious of having these 500 seasons and having a revolving door. It kind of feels like a head coach, and, you know, I mean, it wasn't just a, you know, there's been times on this podcast where I've talked about the possibility of someone else being the head coach, which just goes to show the state of the program. You know, when we have a head coach, and I'm talking about the guys that we could potentially get. So I think we're all ready for better days. You know, we're all anxious. We're all angry. We're all ready for something better because we know it's possible.
That it is. If Manny can get this thing turned around, he would take his dad's spot and absolutely be the mayor of Miami.
Absolutely. Probably be more powerful than the mayor of Miami, honestly.
Absolutely. He for surely would be.
Yeah. But anyways, John, I appreciate you for co-hosting with me today. Clearly, you were the right guy for this interview. I'm pumped about how it turned out, man, and I appreciate you. We always love having you on. I think everybody loves listening to you. So you're a great talent, man. Hopefully we can keep having you on the Fours Up podcast. You've been a great help to us. So
I told you guys, anytime, I enjoy it. Talking Miami is not talking. It's just, that's life for me. So anytime, and continued success to you guys.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, man. And as always, go Canes.
Go Canes.
This has been the Fours Up Podcast.